Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This is the Hip Hop Saved My Life podcast. Thank you for listening to the podcast. Hope you enjoy the podcast. Now sit back, cause it's time for the podcast.
Okay, welcome to Hip Hop Saved My Life episode 11. Some sad news. Rue Madge is not with us today. I don't know what's happened to him. I just haven't been able to get hold of him. So if anybody knows of his whereabouts, please feel free to give me a shout. We're all worried about him. Replacing Rue Madge in the role of somebody that's sort of having a midlife crisis and isn't really into hip-hop is Ben Green.
Hello.
Hello, Ben. Director of Asian Provocateur and hip-hop fan, right?
Yeah, I think probably more than Rue Madge was.
You think so?
Well, I don't know.
Well, you've sort of been listening to this and getting annoyed at Rue Madge, haven't you?
Well, annoyed too much. I'm worried about him more than annoyed.
I think we're all worried about him. He's got this Japan trip planned. He won't be drawn on who the friend is that he's going with. I don't know why he's going. He wants to buy a moped. That's another thing to be concerned about, isn't it?
Mm. And his wrist.
Yeah, he's got an ongoing wrist problem, which he's been very cagey about. But
he's not been fired, has he?
Let's see how this goes, Ben. I mean, I don't want to... I just don't know where he is.
Okay.
So, I don't think he's been fired. But if you know anything about hip-hop, immediately you're more qualified than Rue Madge. That's all I'm saying. So, you know, it's no pressure on you. It's not a paid gig anyway, so it's not exactly like...
I'm not desperate to come back.
I can't imagine you're chomping at the bit to make this a permanent thing. Do you know what I mean? But yeah.
It's nice to be here.
Really good to have you.
Really good to be here.
Really
though.
Great. And are you excited about Asian Provocateur Series 2?
Well, we've talked about this. I think it's more fear and just general, you know, terror of having to make another one. But it will be fun.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've got the commission now, so let's just make it. And then, we are definitely going to get the money regardless, aren't we? So I don't suppose it matters that much. Does it?
Well, it's your career, isn't it? I could probably take my name off it, but you'll... And it's your family as well.
Yeah, true. So that does sort of raise the stakes a little bit. Well, thanks a lot for that, Ben. Anybody that's looking forward to watching Asian Provocateur Series 2, I imagine that's put you in a right froth of excitement.
Can we use that for the trail?
Jeez.
How's life treating you anyway, Ben, generally?
Yeah, good. I had a problem with my drains this morning.
Go on, this sounds good. This sounds like some gold that we can delay Nihal's introduction for.
No, it's just I opened the dishwasher.
Yeah.
And it was genuinely, like, full of water.
Right.
But then I realised I hadn't let the...
I think that's called an incident rather than an anecdote.
Yeah, go on. So it was full of water, yeah. Was it at the end of the cycle or was it mid-cycle?
Right.
Ah.
Well, what's really... Because I don't... Yeah, exactly. So what happened, I was so keen to unload the dishwasher that, unfortunately, I'd done it too early.
So that's not a problem with your drains, mate, is it? That's you don't know how a dishwasher works.
Yeah.
How is that a problem? How is that a problem with your drains?
Well, it's not. It's not a problem with the drains, but it could have been. Okay.
That's like saying I've got a problem with my toilet. What happened? I shat all over the floor.
But it was bad because I was on my own in the house.
You're right. Okay.
And I had to deal with it.
So what that story actually is, is you opened the dishwasher too early. That's what. That's how. Just from now on, when you tell that story going forward, and God willing, you don't. But if you do, that's the tagline for it. Not that there's something wrong with your drains, right? There's nothing wrong with your drains, mate. You open the dishwasher too early.
I had my stag do.
Yeah, just stag do.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, how was it?
You didn't go?
I was invited.
You were invited.
Yeah, but I couldn't go
to
the tour show. I didn't pull out. I couldn't never go.
You said you were going to rearrange things.
Yes, but I couldn't in the end, so...
he's not allowed to speak. I shouldn't look at him.
No, and also, looking across at him in a knowing way doesn't work for the podcast format.
I'm learning. It's a new process.
Roomage, where are you? Please get in touch. Okay, so have you fixed the dishwasher situation?
Yeah, well, luckily, Ocado had delivered a cleaning solution for free. So it cleared Limescale. So...
Oh, hashtag first world problems.
This is a hip-hop.
This is how hip-hop, Ben, is.
Anyway, it was a free
gift. It was a drive-by.
But it wasn't like I knew that was going to happen.
Right.
That's weird.
It's happy chance, isn't it? So you needed the lines cleared. Ocado delivered some solution. Why did they deliver it free? You don't know?
Because I was really chuffed.
Okay, well, that's good. That's good. Thank you, Ben.
Have you been? Do I ask you that?
Yeah, you can. Yeah.
Have you been? What's been going on?
I've been good. Yeah, really great.
Suddenly my dishwasher story seems pretty good.
Does it?
This is the bit where we introduce our guest.
Ladies and gentlemen, I am delighted and honoured and just goddamn so goddamn happy to introduce radio and TV personality, ex-rapper or current rapper? Do you still do a bit of rapping?
Well, we're doing a bit of rapping next week.
We are actually, yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Nihal. Hello.
Hello, mate.
How you doing,
Hello,
mate?
Ben.
You good?
Hello. All right, Ben.
I'm all right, yeah.
Good to have you here.
I'm going to steal that drain story.
Oh, it's so good,
isn't it? I think
that's
a story of a thousand uses.
It's a shame you burnt that material on the podcast, isn't it, really?
I think I could still use it.
You bit another run out.
I can just imagine the plumber standing in front of you going, so what you're trying to say is, mate, you just opened the dishwasher before. Mm. No, it's a drainage
issue.
There's
a problem with the drains.
See, you have to understand, Ramesh thinks that my voice sounds like what you just did. I think it...
I'm sorry, I've lost my shit. I'll tell you what it is that story was so good, I'm just nervous about how we're going to follow it. But Nihal, how's life treating you?
Life is really good because I get to sit in a room with you and talk about hip-hop, which is just going to be brilliant.
Here's a little bit that we like to call, how did you get into hip-hop?
Now, I think it's fair to say you're not just a hip-hop fan, but you're a participant.
Yes.
Now, you were in... What's your hip-hop background? You were in Collapse Along, weren't you?
Yeah, but before that, I was in... So I was 16 years old when I put on my first kind of rap events in Harlow in Essex, where I grew up. So we had this venue called The Square, and we decided that we wanted to put on rap events. And I was MCing, battle MCing at school, secondary school, because... We went to a predominantly white school, and in the first couple of years, there was a lot of these people called skinheads around. Yeah. And skinheads didn't particularly like people of my shade.
Right.
In fact, they were really quite offended and then went on to be quite offensive towards people like me. And
so
then,
you had skinheads at your school?
Yeah, we had skinheads, and I'm of that age where kind of throughout the, what I would think, early 80s, into little, not far beyond the kind of early 80s, there were these kind of, racists, really. It was quite fashionable to be a racist. It was quite weird for certain groups of people.
I do kind of miss that old school racism.
Well, you knew where you stood with
them. Yeah, definitely. Prefer it to the sort of covert stuff, do you know what I mean? Just straight out.
Well, you could see them coming.
Yeah.
You know, you could see the green bomber jacket and the tight jeans and the Dr. Martin's
boots.
And
when you were getting your head kicked in, it felt honest. Do you know what I mean?
There was a real honesty in it.
Yeah,
there was
an
integrity in the way. And especially as well, of course, it was quite good because in terms of fitness, because there was pretty much no street you could walk down without you having to run part of it, which was quite nice. So we were always quite fit. I mean, it was healthy. It was very healthy.
So how did these rap battles go down in that environment?
Well, what happened was is that as hip-hop became more and more fashionable, and hip-hop was brought to us from America.
Because I imagine when you first started doing that, it wasn't that fashionable. Because it became like the coolest thing to listen to.
Yeah, I guess it just was something we were doing at school. And then it became kind of fashionable because we just loved it. It just spoke to us. And the more fashionable it became, because it was really African-Americans that were the main proponents of it, it meant that being racist probably didn't really fit into that world.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's a little bit like it's really difficult to be a racist football fan anymore.
Yeah.
Because you just go and go, you know, I mean, you're an Arsenal fan. I mean, can you imagine? It'd be almost impossible for you to not like black people and be an Arsenal fan.
Yeah.
That would be a very difficult, You couldn't square that circle very easily, could you?
No. Chelsea supporters manage it sometimes.
They negotiate it really effectively.
Well, they had a song for it. We're racist, and that's the way we like it, I seem to remember.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess some are more intelligent than others, and they can do it. They can push through.
Yeah, yeah, it's really good how they just sort of dodge those.
I wonder if they have.
Quandaries.
I wonder on the train over to Europe, they were having deeply philosophical questions about what is inherently the paradox in their racism. Yeah. I wonder if that conversation was had.
Yeah, yeah. So you
yes.
So you started doing these rap battles.
Yeah.
And then how did that progress into you sort of rapping your? Were you?
Hold on. The connection with the skinheads was that. You like battle? You weren't battling.
No,
them.
No. It was no.
That'd
it
be
was
amazing.
That's what I think. That would be. Then I took them on. Like,
that would be amazing. I'm an MC, and I don't care. Clearly, you got more brains than hair. Yeah. Would have been.
Imagine the number of things they could find to rhyme with packy.
Oh,
it's just such an easy word.
You look stoned, smoking that wacky backy.
Yeah, there you go.
Then, or how about you come with my family to Falaraki?
Yeah, there you go.
There's another one.
There you go. Yeah. Yeah.
Ben, would you like to do a packy rhyme?
do you know what? I think as a Cardo purchasing Jew, I'll keep quiet.
Is that your Wikipedia like tagline?
Is that your business card?
Ben Green, a Cardo purchasing Jew.
Yeah. But okay, so hold on. So you were at school.
School was in Essex, comprehensive school, and it had that kind of environment. And then hip-hop... I mean, this is why this podcast, the title of it, is brilliant, because hip-hop did save my life. I mean, hip-hop... made me someone. It gave me confidence. It gave me a sense that being a brown boy in a white school, that I had a tribe to belong to. Everyone else seemed to have these tribes. And Ramesh, you'll know, if you're Sri Lankan, you're a minority of a minority of a minority. Because all the Asians are Indian or Pakistani, right? So you're not even one of them, right? So then you're going, well, what are you then? And then I am of Buddhist background. So we're Sinhalese Buddhists. So there are more Tamil Sri Lankans in the UK, of which, of course, you're one. So that made me a minority amongst Sri Lankans in the UK.
Yeah.
So suddenly you were like layer upon layer. But then if you could rap, suddenly everyone wanted you to be in their crew.
Yeah.
And if you could freestyle rap, which was the ability to just rap off the top of your head, then that made you a particularly valuable part of a crew, because it means when it came to battle raps, you could look at someone and kind of dismantle them exactly. It wasn't pre-written rhymes. You could look how rubbish their high-tech tech trainers were and how terrible their kind of Glenn Hoddle-esque mullet was and have a go at them, or their fake Sergio Tacchini tracksuit.
Imagine, I mean, a good 8 Mile would be better if there's some mullets in it.
And Sergio Tacchini, quite frankly.
So how did it come to pass that you started having a recording career then?
It came to pass really because of collapsed lungs. So the Square in Harlow, which was this place, this kind of hub, where it was sadly closed only a couple of months ago, but it was where a lot of kind of musicians used to meet. And there was a guy called Anthony Chapman who was making beats and was into grunge and that kind of Seattle... sub-pop kind of scene, but also massively into hip-hop, massively into Cypress Hill and Public Enemy, etc. And he was kind of put this band together, and he said, would you like to front it? And I was like, yeah, just thinking it's not going to go anywhere. And then Collapsed Lung, weirdly, just something happened. Like, suddenly all the indie press were into it, NME were into it, Joe Wiley played one of our songs on Radio 1, and a lot of A&R record companies came to see us, and suddenly it became, wow, okay, I can probably do this.
Yeah.
And then I got signed... Actually, I mean, way before that, I put out a rap track on a compilation album in 1989.
What was it called?
It was called Into the Music, and the compilation album was called Hardcore Volume 1, and you can still... You can hear the track, actually. It's on YouTube somewhere.
Is this a solo track? Or
yeah, it was a solo track, yes. Yeah,
what
MC Crazy A.
Wow.
I know, right? And crazy, spelt K-R-A-Z-E-E.
Holy shit, that's hip-hop.
Yeah.
K-R-A-Z-E-E. Now I know who I'm talking to.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah, you know? Yeah. AKA, also known as Machine. Real bad, but some mad poetical protein. Is what I feel like cruel. It's bad, but it's good for you, fool. Heathen, you say I'm believing. What you like, no concern, no retrieving. No forcing, multipliers, no E. Number bumper liars. How did that track go down, then?
I guess like a lead balloon, really. I mean,
do you like it?
Yeah, I do, actually.
That's
good. I like it because the beat is amazing. I think the sample was from an Ike and Tina Turner record, which is but this really funky song. And actually, the DJ who made it, DJ Colt 45, is still one of my best mates.
With a C or a K?
With a C.
Okay.
Actually, he went between the two. There is a K and a C. There is a K and a C. I know. He has done it before.
With a K.
Yeah, he's thrown his K's up and then he's seed it as well. Yeah. Yeah.
Just gone for a more sort of literacy.
I think as he got older and mature,
yeah,
and especially once he became a father, he thought it was perhaps remiss not to spell words properly. Yeah.
When his kids go, "Daddy, how do you spell Coke 45? And he goes, "With a C." And they go, "Why have you?" "No, I've got it with a C now, kids, don't you?"
Get on purchasing board. On Amazon. It's good to know what you're buying.
But you were also in a group called Muddy Funksters.
Yes.
I made this up.
No. We were in a group called Muddy Funksters.
How did that come about?
Because I didn't want to be in Collapsed Lung anymore.
Right.
And
is that because you didn't like the name of the band? It is quite a grim name, isn't it?
It is. It's like prostate infection or something. It's like, not really something that you think.
Where
that,
did that name come from?
Well, they just made it up, and I had no say over that.
Yeah.
And Muddy Funksters came from a Harry Enfield sketch, because we were all obsessed with Harry Enfield at that
As
time.
As most hip-hop groups were. At
hugely.
Yeah.
You were either them, or if you're a bit older, Monty Python.
They're
the two massive.
Yeah.
So people,
MC Monty was.
Yeah.
So
Africa Bombard, those kind of guys, massive Monty Python fans.
Yeah.
But you see, we went a bit more, because we were a bit younger.
Yeah,
we went into the Harry Enfield thing. So me and Colt and another guy called Alex Vickers, the three. That wasn't his... I don't know what his name was, actually. As his hip-hop name. Because Alex Vickers is not really much of a hip-hop name, is it?
No. It's Colt 45, MC Crazy 8, and Alan Vickers. Is it Alex?
Alex Vickers. Alex Vickers. Yeah. It's not really the one. So I can't remember what he even... anyway. And so we decided... So Collapsed Lung got me to such a stage that another record company called Go Discs, which was the home of Porter's Head and Gabriel and Beautiful South and those kind of acts.
So you're sort of... that makes sense.
That makes total sense. And Paul Weller. And the guy who ran that, a guy called Andy McDonald, who owned Go Discs, really liked me as a frontman and wanted to sign us. So we did. We got signed to this label when I was, like, I think in the second year of university. I was about 22, 23.
So you must have been, like, excited, right? You signed to a record label.
Yeah, you signed to a label, and it was part of Polydor. So it was, it had really beautiful offices in Hammersmith, and we'd go down there and hang out, and, and Gabrielle and Porter's Head and all these kinds of people.
And she was saying, dreams really can come true, can't they, Nihal?
They really did.
Yeah.
And, of course, she looked... You don't like... See, Roomage would have liked that reference, wouldn't he? He would have liked that reference.
He would have gone for the Gabrielle reference. He would have lapped that up, mate.
He's singing it now, wouldn't he?
Yeah. But Ben's not having any...
He'd get his old eye patch on.
In terms of taste, Ben, you're raising the bar.
Rack your brains. Give it some thought. What was the first hip-hop album you bought?
Okay, Nihal, how did you... So that we've covered how you first got into hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah.
What's the first hip-hop album you really properly got into, do you think?
It would be... the first one I bought was Yo Bum Rush the Show.
Yeah.
Public
the
Enemy.
Mighty Public Enemy.
Public Enemy. Put it up on the board, another rapper shot down from the mouth that roared. 1, 2, 3, down for the count. The result of my lyrics, oh yes, no doubt. Cold rock rap, 49 is supreme. It's what I choose and I use. I never lose to a team, cause I can go solo like a Tyson photo. Make the fly girls wanna have my photo. When I first heard a track from that album called Public Enemy Number 1, it just was one of those moments. I think all of us will have tracks where you've just got, like, when you heard Song 2 by Blur or, those kind of tracks where you just go, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
And it, for me, as, I don't know, I think I was 16, 15 at the time, and I heard that song, and I remember my mate and I from school, we got on the train from Harlow in Essex, and we went to a little record shop in Soho called Groove Records, which was on Greek Street. 52, I think, Greek Street. And what was brilliant about Groove Records was it was about the size of this little studio that we're in right now, which is, what, 5 foot by 8 foot or something?
I don't know. Like, it's about the same size as Groove Records.
Exactly right. And there'd be this kind of slightly rotund, well, not slightly, rotund old lady that would sit in there, and she'd know all about the latest US imports. And we went in there and I bought that, and we couldn't wait to get back to Essex to play it. So we stopped off at Neil's, my mate Neil, his gran's house in Walthamstow.
Yeah.
Hello, how are you? And we put on this Public Enemy record in the thing and we're just freaking out to the sound of it. It sampled a track called Blow Your Head by Fred Wesley, and Fred Wesley was James Brown's trumpet player. And the way they sampled it, the Bomb Squad, which was the production team behind Public Enemy, looped it up and used it. It was just a sound we'd never heard before. And Chuck D's voice, and we were just, that was it.
Public Enemy. Chuck D's got, like, one of the best voices ever in hip-hop,
come on.
Right? Amazing.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
One of the sort of criticisms levelled at Public Enemy, because Ben, I'm going to out you now. You're not a massive Public Enemy fan, are you?
Well, I got into hip-hop later on, and I don't... It probably is an unacceptable thing to say. I think it's quite hard to get... I think because you've got that lovely experience of discovering it. And when I sort of got into hip-hop, it was sort of more around, I'd say, 2000 and, like, 99. So going and getting it and discovering it when it's fresh is kind of good.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, I think it's quite difficult now once you've heard sort of a modern style of hip-hop to then go back and then feel as excited.
It's weird, though, because, you know, when I was on Radio 1 and 1 Extra, I would be DJing to people who were, like, maybe two or three when Biggie and Tupac were around. But for some reason, Biggie and Tupac, you can still play to 18, 19-year-olds.
Yeah.
That hasn't seemed to have aged for a lot of people, like Snoop Dogg, early Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre. Those kinds of tracks, people still love. But I get what you mean with Public Enemy. Maybe there's something a bit too harsh
about
it.
I think the harshness, I think it's a lot more sort of percussion heavy, do you know what I mean? And it's all about, whereas with like the Snoop and all that sort of stuff, it's more like groove, you know. Dre's production of that time was all sort of, you know, he'd use a lot of the instrumental sort of, and I do think it makes a difference, because like Nation of Millions for me was the album that got me into Public Enemy. Like, I just lost my mind, right?
Yeah.
Incredible.
Unbelievable.
But whenever I say to somebody said to me, what's your favourite ever hip-hop? And I go, well, one of them is definitely, you know, It Takes Nation of Millions is like in everyone's, and then you play it to them, and people that didn't listen to it when it first came out, I sort of like, I don't know, man. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's a weird one. It really is a weird one.
Do you think it's also something to do with Flavor Flav? Do you think just like, do you think that's slightly tarnished?
You think Bridget Nielsen?
Yeah.
Rather than Public Enemy?
Yeah.
What a legacy.
I mean, they've got to be pissed off about him, haven't they?
Yeah. Well, I remember going to see Public Enemy at, whenever you see Public Enemy live, it always looks like Chuck D always does a little bit of an eye roll when Flavor Flav does something. Do you know what I mean?
It's like sort of an annoying mate they have to bring along.
Yeah. Okay, Flavor, let's just try and roll on with the show.
At one point, Steve is going to take his trousers off and his pants off and stand on the bar. When he does it, no one's there and no one encourages him. That's basically Chuck D talking to the rest of the Public
but
Enemy.
But didn't he also undo like a lot of what Public Enemy stood for, didn't he?
Well, a few of them did. I mean, what happened was with Public Enemy was they got to this stage where they were so massive that the press, and kind of so dangerous and subversive, and then one of them, Professor Griff, said some quite anti-Semitic things, which then in America, of course, the whole kind of media just rounded on him, and rightly so, for what the things that he said. And then Flavor Flav, of course, with his problems with drugs, quite well-documented problems with drugs, it all kind of imploded slightly. And then Chuck D did have a solo career for a while.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I don't know if you read Chuck D's book. It's Mr. Chuck.
It's
interesting hearing his side of it. Like with the Professor Griff thing, I think we talked about on the podcast before, is that they had so many interviews and so much press to do that Chuck D just one day said to Professor Griff, can you go and handle these interviews? And then little did he know that Professor Griff would go off and do those interviews in a very anti-Jewish style and just create a huge problem. And the other thing was, is Chuck D felt a sense of loyalty to Professor Griff. So why it got Public Enemy into trouble is because he didn't instantly disassociate the group from those comments.
Yeah.
And that's what really got them into the shit, because like...
He didn't Corbyn him, did he?
No, basically,
as we've recently seen.
Yeah, basically, yeah. And it just got him into shit, man. But, Public Enemy, one of the most important, and they were like, they crossed over, didn't they? Like
hugely crossed over. I mean, you were talking, everybody was wearing, I remember there's one of the Terminator films where the young boy in it is
wearing
a Public Enemy
t-shirt
throughout the whole thing. I mean, that just kind of tells you all you need to know about how much Public Enemy became part of the consciousness. And luckily, I'm really privileged to have interviewed Chuck D a number of times and done a Q&A with him at the South Bank Centre.
What was he like?
Do you know what? Really, really cool, but very aware of the image that we have of him.
Right.
And that will not slip. So one of the questions I asked him, being a bit of a buffoon, was, what's your favourite joke?
Right.
To Chuck D of Public Enemy.
Does Chuck D do jokes? Does he do jokes?
Well, that was his answer. He said, I don't have any jokes, but you should say.
Hey, Griff. Griff's got 20 minutes about Jews. You're going to love it.
He's like the Jackie Mason of the Nation of Islam mixed together. So, he said, I choose not to show that side of me.
Right.
So, well, that's what he said kind of in this interview that we did in front of, you know, about 300-400 people.
God, I bet that brought the house down, didn't it?
Yeah, I know. As punchlines go, that's a pretty poor one, it has to be said. But, you know, you have to get over the fact. And then afterwards, we all went for dinner. And
you went for dinner with Chuck D?
Yeah. Where'd you go?
Yeah, we had sushi, right?
Right.
Yeah, had sushi. Yeah, and me and my mate sat there.
Because Chuck D likes it raw. That's the thing about a Public Enemy, man.
Well, yeah. ODB preferred it. He preferred it.
Oh, he loves some sushi. Oh, baby, he likes it raw.
Oh, yeah. Are we having the fish? Oh, baby, I like it raw. Oh, baby, I like it raw. Yeah, so meeting and luckily
was that the person that you wanted to be? Have you
met?
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Well, that, and then when I was working in music PR, I worked for a lot of MCs, and one of them was Gangstar,
right.
So Guru and DJ Premier, and I got them onto Later with Jules Holland when I was a publicist, and hanging out with Guru was amazing because they were again Gangstar,
another one of the greatest voices in hip hop.
Yeah,
right?
So cool.
Oh my so God. Cool.
That dude.
I'ma start collecting props, connecting plots, networking like a conference. Cause the nonsense is yet to stop. Jake, shake me down. Haters wanna take me down, break me down, clap. All they heard was a sound. Yo, I
it's really sad to say it because he's like here, but he kind of emptied the minibar at like 9 o'clock in the morning.
Oh shit.
At the hotel, he just kind of sat there. We were talking, and I remember him just taking like drinks and drinking and me just sitting going.
I'd never saw him in an interview. I'd always imagined that he sounded like that on the records, but in an interview sounded like Joe Pasquale.
Well, it's all that.
Yeah, I'm Guru from Gangstar. Is the mic off?
Oh my God, I hated that. Why did you do that?
I had step in the arena.
But he was a cool guy. What was Primo?
Really,
like?
Really cool guy. Much more reserved.
Right.
Much more, he kind of slightly got. It got a bit racist because one of his crew called me Gunga Din.
Holy shit, man.
Yeah, like one of his crew actually called me.
Look at Ben, try not to crack up at Gunga Din.
That's offensive, that's horrible.
Which was weird.
I do not condone that.
which is really weird because, firstly, it was almost nostalgic being called Gunga Din. Like, that's something that happened to my dad's generation. Like, that's not something that happened to, like, no one called me Gunga Din.
Yeah.
It was almost like Peter Sellers kind of era of kind of racism.
How does that happen? Like, was it like, could you pass me the salt, Gunga Din? Or was it like a proper insult?
So what happened was, is that with a lot of rap acts, they make the mistake of having people around them who are not professionals, but they're family members who are on the gravy train.
Yeah.
And DJ Premier had someone with him who was an absolute tool, like a nightmare. So he's the kind of guy that would come up to me, like we were doing Later with Jules Holland, they were in rehearsals, he'd come up to me and he'd go, yo, Primo wants a bottle of Courvoisier. And you're like, right, well, do I look like an off-license? And he's like, no, Primo wants Courvoisier, which of course meant he wanted a bottle of Courvoisier.
Right.
And he wanted the publicist slave to go off and buy him a bottle of Courvoisier and bring it back. Other alcoholic beverages are, of course, available. And then, because I went, mate, my job is to get them on television. We are now in a television studio.
Yeah.
That is my job. Okay, my job is not to go and get you. So then we get back into the tour bus and this guy turns to Premier and goes, yo, Gunga Din wouldn't get you a thing.
Oh, my God.
Right? So then what happens is I then tell my boss at the time, who is, you know, ran the publicity company I work for, that this had happened.
Yeah. After he laughed at the Gunga Din thing.
He goes, that's brilliant. I'll call you that.
He's got you.
Oh, look at it. Gunga wants to make a complaint. Oh, Gunga's pissed off.
Do you know what? I was getting bored of calling you Curry Muncher, so that's a brilliant. That's a brilliant. I got a replacement for that, he said. Calling you Kemo Sabi wasn't really doing it for me. Gunga did. That's much funnier. So then, weirdly enough, my boss, who was like a big, you know, big white fella, he went up to DJ Premier and went, listen, this guy works his ass off to get you on TV, and this is not cool.
Yeah. So,
and I got an apology from DJ Premier.
Holy shit.
He came up to me and he went,
did he do it in a scratch, or did he actually say it?
No, because he went, sorry. And he did it in an accent. Sorry, Gungadin. No, he didn't. He put his head from the side and said, oh, very, very sorry, very sorry. Being a hip-hop connection journalist and then being a publicist, I got to meet lots of different rappers. And be it, so we did Top of the Pops in LA once with Mos Def, Pharoah Monch and Nate Dogg, which was a really interesting experience.
They did Oh No, didn't they?
They did, and I did the PR for that song.
Right.
So I was the publicist for a label called Raucous Records. And Raucous.
You worked with Raucous Records?
Yeah, I was their publicist.
Holy shit, mate. I love Raucous
Records. Yeah, yeah. So I was their publicist in the UK. So Pharoah Monch, like Simon Says by Pharoah Monch.
Yeah, yeah.
That was one of the songs I did. And I did Oh No. I did, in fact, that whole album, Black on Both Sides.
What do you
Mos
think was the better verse? Mos Def's or Pharoah Monch's on that track?
Oh, Pharoah's.
That's what I thought. Yeah. Very contagious rap. Should be trapped in cages. Through stages of whackness. Fouls raps ablazing. And it amazes me how you claim thug but go two ways without Skytel pages. I'm intellectual. Pass more essays than motorcade. Police parades. Do we sell it? Mate, Pharoah's is unbelievable.
It's incredible.
Dude. I mean, Mos Def's amazing, don't get me wrong, but everyone says Mos Def, but Pharoah Monch kills that.
Oh, yeah,
track,
he just
man.
Absolutely slaughters it. It's brilliant.
You've been responsible for their probably their most popular tracks.
Well, they were responsible for it.
Well, you were the publicist on...
Yeah, but old Gunga Din had to get the refreshments, didn't he?
We haven't got them in the studio, so I think let's claim it was you, because just trying to help you. Fucking hell, I won't bother next time. I'm trying to big you up.
Well, that's amazing, man.
Yeah. So I got to do all of that, which was great. And then I remember going to New York because I was working on a track by Kool G Rap, and we went to the Queens in New York to shoot to be on the video shoot, and we took a TV show out with us. And Fat Joe was there, who had I noticed, and it was at the time when Prince Nassim, the boxer, was really like massive, and he was just wanted to talk to me about that because he obviously thought we were related or something.
Yeah, of course. Hey, Gunga, you know Prince Nassim? Yeah.
Yo, Curry Muncher, yo, Spice Bucket.
Spice Bucket. That was out of left field, wasn't it?
I'm just trying to be creative with my racial epithets.
I can't believe you were involved in Raucous Records.
Yeah, yeah. I worked for Raucous Records for about 3 or 4 years.
Did you like Company Flow?
Yeah, I did like Company Flow. I remember interviewing Company Flow. But the thing about them was quite interesting, was that was real, what we call backpacker hip-hop.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like that backpacker hip-hop where they want you to have very abstract flows and just be really complicated rhyme structures and no chorus.
Yeah.
Chorus is selling
out.
Yeah. If you are mid late, you are a seller.
Tell us about the latest track. It's just me. It's a beat. 17 minutes of me just going off the top of the head.
One rhyme.
And for most of the track, it'll sound like I'm rapping to a different beat to what's playing.
But that's the style we incorporate, because we like to use the pragmatics of the mathematics and the schematics. they like so talk they, like that.
When they got it right, it was great, right? When they didn't, it sounded like somebody had just laid a different vocal over a track and then put it out. It was insane, man.
It looked like someone was reading out architectural plans hypotheticals of over a beat.
On the statistics. You wouldn't understand my mathematical linguistics.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is like. Supercalifragilistics. I'm a man, but I'm not a man. The people, they don't understand the humanity that is contained within me, within the body, coming up from the reflex. That's the specs. You understand, I got reflex, and I'm so complex. But it doesn't need a rhyme, because I'm in my mind, climbing through the third dimension of my middle eye. My middle eye, my third eye. That's what I am.
And then at the end of the track, you just hear really quiet. There's a bit of fun. That was deep, man.
And then the thing was, because I always hated backpacker rap fans, right? Because for me, the whole purpose of hip-hop, it wasn't about this is ours and no one else can have it. Yes. The people who made it, and having been someone who tried to make a career out of it, was actually wanted to sell it. You wanted to get hip-hop out to as many people as possible. That's why it spread so much. But for backpackers, it was just like, oh, they've sold out. Like, everyone had sold out.
Yeah.
You know, if you had got anything other than... You had to wear, presumably, combats. You had to wear some kind of work wear with a military kind of vibe to it. You definitely couldn't have a girlfriend because girlfriends were selling out.
Well, if you go to any of those hip-hop gigs, it's unlikely you're ever going to get a girlfriend because...
Just behind the bar.
No women there at all.
Complex, feministics, masculinity, simplistics.
Quite a homoerotic environment.
Whole club just full of dicks. Yeah, yeah.
Like, it was
you can't test. Come to my show. A sausage fest.
You just walk in, you're like, wow, I'm never, ever going to meet a woman. Listen, backpackers are just joking, all right? It's just a joke. Little jokistics.
Hey man, what's your favorite hip hop album?
Okay, so what is, would you say, is your favorite hip hop album of all time?
Do you know what, this was
a very difficult question.
It is a really difficult question because I was pre-designed for the Spotify generation in that I'm a very much a singles person. Like, cool. I'm like, it's tracks to me. Yeah. I've always been disappointed slightly by albums, especially hip hop albums, because for the longest time it felt as though hip hop albums, there was so much filler on them. You know,
I think hip hop albums, maybe hip hop more guilty than almost any other music form for having a lead single and then 12 tracks of hot shit, just like just fucking mess, like for the rest of the album.
And it kind of put me off album culture in many ways. But there were some albums that you could listen to, you know, and It Takes a Nation of Millions is definitely one of those. Yeah. 3 Feet High and Rising by De La Soul is, you know, you can listen to from beginning to end. And this is where I get into kind of dodgy territory with some people. The Miseducation of Lauryn Hill, I think, is a hip-hop album. You know?
Right.
I think that she, coming from the Fugees and produced by Salaam Remy, who, of course, produced lots of Nas stuff, that is a hip-hop album.
Yeah.
It may not necessarily be a rap album, but it's definitely a hip-hop album.
Our philosophy, possibly speak tongue. Beat drums, Abyssinian, street Baptist, rap this and violin it. From the beginning, my practice extending across the atlas. I begat this, flipping in together on a dirty mattress. You can't match this, rapper slash actress, more powerful than two Cleopatras, bomb graffiti on the tomb of Nefertiti.
Ben, you a Lauryn Hill fan?
Yeah, I am a Lauryn Hill, although I question whether it's a hip-hop album.
Wow.
Well, not only because, and I don't know this is officially how you classify a hip-hop album, my sister's favourite rapper is Robbie Williams, and she owns Miseducation of Lauryn Hill.
Whoa.
So in my mind, I can't see it as a... But I love that album. I love it. But do you know what I mean? Like, is it... It's a, you know...
Your sister's favourite rapper is Robbie Williams.
Yeah. So what I mean, she wasn't into hip-hop, basically.
So Robbie...
I think that was self-explanatory.
Yeah.
Imagine you got on the podcast. Imagine you got on the podcast.
I didn't need to clarify that. Yeah.
Her favourite rapper is Robbie Williams.
Yeah.
And weirdly, she wasn't really into it.
Yeah.
How old is your sister, Ben?
She's 40. Oh, no, she's 39.
39.
Yeah. But like, no, I guess I...
Both Ramesh and I can't wait to meet her.
Yeah.
Based on that recommendation.
Yeah. But she did have that album. I remember I actually listened to that first because she had it.
Well, that's because Killing Me Softly was just a massive pop record. But if you dig deeper into that album, Lost Ones and these kinds of tracks on there, it is just everything is everything. It's unbelievably hip-hop. I mean, the beats, the bits that it flows into rhymes, the breaks, the samples, it's a hip-hop album.
Did you go to a recent live show?
No. The last time I saw her live, part of the stage set fell down. I think it was at Brixton Academy or something, and it just kind of told you all you needed to know about... It was very symbolic of how her life had kind of dismantled in itself. You just kind of looked at it and went, oh, I don't want to remember you like this.
But the Fugees comeback track, was it Take It Easy? Was that it? Take It Easy, do you remember that?
What the hell are you talking about?
I have no idea.
No? Take It Easy. Have you never listened to it?
No.
I hope I haven't made this up in my head because I like the... Take It Easy is a really good...
I think it's a
good...
Robbie Williams track.
Yeah. Take It Easy, you should play it. It's a good track.
I got moxie. I'm so damn poxy. Industry try to block me like cops and paparazzi. Full stop, don't copy. Just cop me properly. Everybody same policy. Universal equality.
Okay.
And it's honestly got all of them.
When did that come out?
Like 2000?
Oh, really? Interesting.
Roomage wouldn't know that, would he?
No, he wouldn't know that. No. No, Roomage would have.
Yeah. It's a good track, honestly.
Jess Glynn or something.
I don't know why they never released it. It sort of became this thing that came out and then it died.
Well, I always wondered if Lauryn Hill never really wanted to get back together with the other two, did she? Praz, God knows what he's up to, mate.
Who's on Take It Easy?
Well, I imagine
this
he
chat
was.
That I made up.
Well, I presume that the score must have sold, what, 10, 15 million copies?
So did that mean they don't have to work again?
No, he would definitely never have to work again.
Right.
They would never.
Right.
If you're selling that amount of albums and you've got some kind of publishing on that,
yeah,
you will never have to
so
work
again.
So why
would you then? You're just done, innit? Just leave it.
Well, some people have stuff to
but
say.
Look how
don't
wealthy
they?
You are, but you still go on tour.
Yeah, exactly.
But you still do it. You what? Still do it because you do it for the love.
Listen, mate, if I made enough money. To not do it again.
You've already got an exit strategy plan, haven't you?
Do not tell me for a second that on a Thursday night you wouldn't be in Colchester if you didn't. You'd be there in a flash.
No, mate. So Lauryn Hill, Miseducation, Lauryn Hill, that's your favourite album?
No, it would have to be It Takes a Nation of Millions. I mean, you know, because that had just hit after hit after hit, just tracks that you would. But then there are Public Enemy tracks like. Again, it's singles, isn't it? It's Welcome to the Terror Dome.
Yeah.
It's a track that just... What I loved about Public Enemy, which actually is probably one of the reasons why it hasn't really, as you rightly pointed out, Ben...
Crossed over.
Is how dark it was. Like, yeah, the music was so dark. Like, you don't really want to be in a club. You'd be in a concert and listen to Public Enemy, but you could probably listen to Fight the Power and Don't Believe the Hype. But there's not many Public Enemy tracks you really want to hear in a club.
No.
It's a good point. It's about girls, isn't it?
It is about girls, yeah.
It is. It's like, that's why R&B, yeah, hip-hop, that is, I've never
that's
thought
That's why
of
no
that.
One's ever chatted anyone up to Company Flow.
Yeah. Because you know what? You know,
oh, when
you,
also,
you know that, but you know yeah. those type of tunes? What would happen is, people don't dance those tunes. They stand there and rap along to them.
Yes.
Yeah, it's, well, it's the saddest
Simon,
thing.
When you said Simon Says, I remember being in clubs, screaming it and jumping around. And
did
of
you
course,
scream, girls rub on your titties?
Well, exactly. You're
New
never going to pull.
Yeah. New York City.
Pity fool something. Yeah. You never look cool. You never look... Well, maybe some people could pull that off. Jumping around, screaming. But like... I certainly couldn't pull that off. And so if you're doing that, you know, it would suddenly come on a club that was actually more of an R&B sort of hip-hop club. And that would come on and that would kill you for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
How are you guys both with the... Nothing by Noriega, right? Or Nori, tunes, you know, what you going to do? And then the N-word comes up. What do you do in a club?
I'll normally try and find a black person and get authorization before
do you?
I carry... Yeah.
Do you have a...
I think it's just a shout in his face, I thought you were going to say.
Really push it to the ultimate limit.
I don't give a fuck.
And then if I survive, I assume that it's okay.
You can't do it, can you?
What?
Seriously, you can't do it, can you? You can't.
No, of course you
can't. Oh, actually, I just forgot Straight Outta Compton.
Straight Outta Compton. Crazy motherfucker named Ice Cube. From the gang called Niggas With Attitudes. When I'm called off, I got a sawed off. Squeeze the trigger and bodies are hauled off.
That is another hip-hop album where that absolutely blew our minds. When we first heard that song Straight Outta Compton,
yeah,
we just went, this is just, it just so angry.
Yeah.
So but again, another track you can't really play in a
no.
play in a club because it's so harsh.
I went
harsh.
To see Ice Cube and Naughty by Nature at the O2. They did the Indigo at the O2, and Ice Cube opened with Straight Outta Compton, right? And I just thought, you're done now, mate. Like, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do now? Like, it was amazing, man. It's like, what, that album, incredible. But I would argue that album slightly peters out towards it. Like, it's sort of, like really strong tunes.
Yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah,
front loaded, heavily front loaded, that record.
Heavily front loaded for a pre shuffle generation.
It would have made an incredible EP.
It really would have. It really would have, yeah. But I mean, I loved it. It was really, it's so weird when you're kind of growing up in a village in Essex,
yeah,
listening to music made in South Central Los Angeles and representing that whole, that world, and bringing that world into your world.
Yeah, like so many people I knew were obsessed with like going to Compton. Do you know what I mean? You just think, you would die, mate. Like...
It's actually really nice, Compton. Now.
Yeah, it's actually, isn't it? Isn't
it's, actually, it's like I was there. I was there.
It's been gentrified.
I went
There's
crumping.
A cereal cafe there.
I went crumping in Compton.
Yeah, I know.
With a
dance,
clown. Yeah.
Dancer.
Yeah, and it just really looks really nice.
Does it? Yeah.
I mean, I might be tarring it with a brush. That it might be horrible. Like at night. But daytime, everyone seemed really friendly. It seemed like, it actually looked like much nicer than most parts of London, I'd say. Not a dangerous place, don't worry about it. Go there.
All right, fine. Well,
wow. Well, if Foxton's ever moves to Compton, I can say you'll be driving around in a little mini.
A dual aspect, you can see both dealers from just one room.
Oh, man. Hip hop grapes.
Okay, Nihal, is there anything you don't like about hip hop?
The one thing, I kind of already said it in that people that complain, I have an issue with anyone that tells me that the best music has already been.
Yeah.
Because I think if you love hip hop genuinely, and then you would rate Kendrick Lamar as good as any rapper you've ever heard in your life.
Amazing, yeah.
You know, there's no way you could really be a hip hop fan and say, because I went to the World B-Boy Championships the other day, and I was trying to, and I was saying to this guy who was in his 40s and old school, one of the original kind of breakers in this country, and I was saying to him about Kendrick Lamar, and he kind of this wry smirk on his face as if to say, come on.
Yeah.
Come on. Come on. Like that. And you're like, bruv, like, just be open. Like, the whole thing about hip hop is you should be open minded. It's the complete antithesis of hip hop not to be, because if you were making hip hop, you were listening to Can and Kraftwerk and the Beatles and Led Zeppelin, because you were sampling from all these places and all of these different influences were coming in. So for you to then get into your kind of mid 40s and go, all the best music was 91 to 94. Yeah. That was like the best era of hip hop was the early 90s.
Yeah.
And you go, mate, well, you've obviously not listened to hip hop now.
There's a lot of factors that I think contribute to that. One is that whenever you listen to music from that, when you were that age, you have a much more of a connection with it. Mm. But the other thing is people just look at things with rose-tinted glasses, right? Because when we used to listen to hip hop then, there was so much stuff that you thought was shit, and like that, and there was so many good records coming out where they were complaining about the amount of shit hip hop that was being made. Like, that was like a theme. There was so much shit hip hop; it was a theme. It was like a fucking subject matter in records. I'm sick of all this corny hip hop. So let's not pretend that it was all great. There was as much dog shit as there is now. Do you know what I mean? And the thing is, don't get me wrong; there is shit hip hop. You know, it isn't. But one, I'd say it's not for us. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of stuff for the charts. That isn't like the stuff that you like. But there's shitloads of really good stuff, man. Do you mean like that? You know, you talk about Kendrick. He just like spat out an untitled album of just throwaway tracks, and it's better than just stuff I've heard for years and years. And it's great.
And Drake, I mean, Drake's got some. That 0 to 100 beat is as good as any beat that you would have heard like in the '90s.
All up on TV, I thought it made me richer. Wasn't paying me enough, I needed something quicker. So now I'm all in Nico basement, putting working on the phones. Either that or try the money mark to make the pickups.
And he also, what's really interesting now is the grime scene.
You know,
and how that as rap has metamorphosed, and now grime people say we're not rap, we're grime. And it's such a, and it was brilliant because when I was doing hip hop, we always felt such the poor cousin. Like, any British hip hop you heard was like, they called it British hip hop,
which
immediately meant shit, right? That's it, kind of, you like, you weren't going to go over that. But now, grime, you'll just go to grime, and that's better. And in fact, if you listen to a lot of grime, it's more exciting than the stuff that's coming out of America.
Yeah, yeah. And also, America's starting to take notice.
Well, yeah, Drake.
And the thing was, when you used to listen to British hip hop, I mean, there's some of it was great. Like, I loved Hijack. Gunshot and the Hijack. But there's a lot of it that felt like you were doing it out of a sense of duty, like you might support your local community centre. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was.
And do you know what, as well?
Oh, bless them.
And do you know, all that British hip hop really used to do was complain.
Yeah.
It just like moaned all the time.
Yeah.
It was like Victor Meldrew over beats.
Well, you decided to listen to me now, have you?
Yeah. It's like,
don't support Dio. Come on, we'll put the album on then. Come on.
That's how it felt. Just like, dude, if you want people to be into music, give them something to aspire to. Give them something that's uplifting. But it was always like, my life's so terrible. I got no peas and all this kind of stuff.
Okay, so what are you listening to at the moment now, huh?
Kano.
Yeah, Made in the Manor.
I just absolutely love Kano. And the thing is about him is he's such a visionary, and he's not scared to attempt new things and try new flows. And he's brilliant. And he's one of those people that transcends genre. He's a rapper that just becomes, like Mos Def did, like Kendrick. It's just, they're just Kendrick or Mos Def or Skepta. Kano is just one of those guys. You don't just think of him as grime, you just think of him, he is what he is, and he's a lovely guy and a really smart
what I
guy.
Thought was interesting was like when before Made in the Manor came out, he'd had like New Banger and Garage Skank and those are all like proper like adrenaline
140
tunes,
BPM yeah. kind of thing.
And then you listen to the album and he's actually got these like sort of like low tempo sort of
really
like
deep,
reflective dark, yeah songs yeah. And I sort of think what he could have done if he wanted to is just done 15 new bangers, do you know what I mean, like different variations of, and the album still would have been really well received and people would have gone
true.
wicked, but he decided not to do that and I think he deserves a lot of respect for that, like you said, he took a risk, do you know what I mean,
and that's a big risk. I mean yeah, if you think about someone like Stormzy who's done amazingly well, I mean what, Shut Up's got 30 million views now on YouTube,
yeah,
and he's stuck very much to who he is. But what's interesting, I think, is that of all of those, that younger crop of MCs, because Kano's actually a veteran now.
Yeah,
in this
yeah.
game.
He needs to retire.
Stormzy's, yeah. Stormzy.
We're just going to cut that.
Yeah, yeah.
And put it out.
Yeah,
tweet it to Kano.
Yeah.
My favourite. Yeah, great.
Plug one, plug two. Guest plugs for you.
Right, Nahal, we've overrun. This is the longest record we've ever done, mate.
Oh, dude, I'm sorry, man.
That's all right. Is there anything you want to plug, Nahal?
No, really. I mean, I'm well. You and I are doing. You've agreed.
Do you want to talk about this? What your this?
Yeah.
Project
I'm doing this documentary for Sky about my love of hip hop. Literally, how hip hop saved my life. So we're going back to my old school in Essex, and we're finding this kid who's kind of was the age I was when I got into hip hop. We're going to train him up, and then we're going to put him on stage at Wembley Arena in July in front of 10,000 school kids.
That's good.
To rap. In front of these kids. And Ramesh has kindly agreed to come, and me and him are doing a middle-aged rap battle against each other as part of the documentary.
Freestyle? You going to write something?
Oh, well, I'm already writing it.
What?
Yeah.
Are you shitting, mate?
Bro, I'm writing it. I'm writing bars.
How
I'm,
long
I'm
many
coming
bars
for you.
How many... Are you doing... Are you attacking me?
Well, it's a battle.
Not personally.
Like, we went through this in Sri Lanka. I don't know he's still not getting it.
Well, I'm not going to battle you because... Because that would bring out that whole Singhalese Tamil thing. And you
oh
and I would
God,
be in so much
oh
trouble.
God. Can you imagine? We took it down that road. Jesus Christ, man.
Oh,
shitting hell. Becomes a very different programme. Just see Channel 4 News, photo of me and Nahal next to each other. These two guys reignited the conflict.
Oh dear.
So I'm choosing my words. Just, I've managed to get the word quinoa in there.
Okay. Oh, right. Yeah,
it's
you're
one
going
of them
for
ones.
That shit.
It's
okay,
one of them
right,
ones.
Fine,
so,
fine,
you know.
Fine.
I don't know why I'm taking on without any blowing smoke up yours, one of my favourite comedians in the world, why I'm taking you on in a
cheers,
rap.
Mate. Did you hear that, Ben?
Dude, he is, though. And BAFTA nominated, bro. I haven't even talked to you about that.
Yeah.
That is a huge look.
Do you know this? Thanks, Ben. Thank
and you.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Asian Provocateur.
It's
still
not for director, mate. Performance. So let's not give Ben any shine.
It's
right?
a
so,
long editing process.
So just
not a shit on the cutting room floor.
So just to be clear, from the comment you just made, we can very much count out you saying if you win, it was a team effort. Yeah,
oh, mate, you can fuck that up the arse.
Right,
there's
okay.
No way I'm saying that. Absolutely no way.
I'd like to thank
even
Ben
if I,
Green.
Even
no,
if I believed that, I still wouldn't say it.
We've got a good relationship.
So is yours the voice I hear?
That's
questioning
the prick.
Him
you know, the
all
annoying
the
prick.
Time. I was thinking, who is this guy? I loved this guy's voice. Like, genuinely, I thought, this guy's voice.
Are
serious?
You taking
the, don't I don't know
he's
taking the piss
don't
either.
Don't come on here and do
I,
this
I'm
shit.
Not. I really like that banter between the two of you. It was amazing.
Yeah, sure. We can recreate it for the podcast, unfortunately.
Well, I think the drainage and don't put death to that.
Nahal, it's been an absolute pleasure, mate.
Oh,
we'll have
it.
To do a part two or something, man.
Oh, honestly, come like, on, please.
We'll have to, mate. We'll
I
get
was,
you back.
You know, like, this is 11, right?
Yeah.
So I thought to myself when I saw this, and Catherine Ryan's done one, hasn't she?
Yeah.
And I was just thinking to myself, when's he going to ask me? And I thought, I can't ask you.
Yeah.
I've got to wait to be asked.
Yeah, you do have
and
to
when
wait
you
to
did...
Yeah.
Hands in the
happy,
air.
Happy man.
Oh, mate,
I didn't
happy.
Want it to look like just like Sri Lankan link-up, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Sorry, man. Well, we'll get you back for another one.
Well, the diversity thing's already ticked by you, so you don't need me. You just don't need
me. Yeah, you are so surplus to requirements, mate.
No, you need to get more white people on this.
Ben, well done.
Yeah, well done,
You've
Ben.
Been great, man.
Thanks, man.
Really good.
I've enjoyed it.
If anybody out there knows where Room Edge is, please do get in touch.
Oh, Mike. Can I just say, I know we were bantering, but don't say Gunga Din to anyone.
Okay, yeah, cool.
Just wanted to make that clear.
Okay, that's it from me, Ben, Gunga Din. We're out. See you later.
Nu bij Coolblue. €100 korting op de HP Spectre 2-in-1 laptop met Windows 10. Start je laptop nog sneller op dankzij de 1 terabyte SSD-schijf. Vandaag besteld op coolblue.nl. Morgen gratis thuisbezorgd.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.